This episode of How Did I Get Here is brought to you by Hotel Vegas, 1500 East 6th Street. This week, they're having their In the Room series, intimate concerts from big bands. Friday, May 11th, What Made Milwaukee Famous, Doors at 9. Saturday, May 12th, the band you're hearing right now, Ume, 9 p.m. That's Hotel Vegas, 1500 East 6th Street, hotelvegasaustin.com. Man, I'm Johnny, and I'm the host of this podcast. It's called How Did I Get Here? Thank you for listening, by the way. We try to bring you interviews with musicians a couple a week. Musicians, artists, people involved in music, sometimes an author, sometimes a comic, basically entertainers, but mostly focused on music. And I meet some of these people through music, so that's pretty cool. I got recognized last night. I went to go see Ian McLaughlin and the Bump Band with my friend Jake, and we went down there and hung out with our friend Bobby and got to hang out with the band, say hey to Ian, and when we left, we were going to go grab some of the fabulous meatloaf over at 24 Diner here in Austin. It's next to a Waterloo Records, so we went, we were leaving the Lucky Lounge where Ian was playing, and a guy was like, hey, Johnny, and I turned around, I didn't know him. He asked me if Ian McLaughlin was going to be a guest on How Did I Get Here at some point. And then I realized that there's fans out there. So I want to say hi to all the fans. And come say hi to me. It totally made my night that guy listens to the podcast. And he was excited. I was excited to meet him. He was excited to meet me. Pablo, if you're out there, you made my night. My guest today is Lauren Larson. She's in the band Ume. And it's a band that she started with her husband, Eric Larson. And they're playing May 12th at Hotel Vegas, but they're also writing for a new record. They have records out. The band Ume, I first heard about them when I was in the tub reading Rolling Stone, and I called my cousin Emily. She told me about them, so I looked them up and listened to their music back then, whenever that was, and I really loved it. I loved the band, and I was really excited to have Lauren over. I didn't know what she was going to be like, but when she came over, it turns out she's this really smart and very sensitive and very soulful person. I can only imagine her husband, Eric, is the same. And they make beautiful music with noise and rock and punk rock and melody. And I really hope you enjoy our conversation. I know you'll enjoy their music. And I guess without further ado, here's Lauren Larson from the band Ume. I got a subscription to Rolling Stone from my cousins for Christmas a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. And I've turned this into this thing that I do where I bathe and read. I understand that when you get into your 40s as a man, all of a sudden you like to bathe, and it's true. So I'm bathing and I'm reading through Rolling Stone, and they're talking about these new bands, you know, to watch and all this kind of thing. And then I came across a band called, what I thought was called Yume from mm-hmm. Austin. And I called my cousin Emily because she knows all the bands and stuff. That makes me sound not hip, but she does. So I call her and I'm like, hey, so do you know this band Yume from here? And she's like, it's Ume. They're amazing. And so another friend of mine today, when I told her that you were coming over, she saw y'all at South by Southwest and loves you.
Oh, thank you.
So yeah. So that was my first experience, was in the tub here in this apartment.
My favorite quote is, when in doubt, take a bath.
Yeah.
So I'm right there with you.
I'm totally like that. Everything. Like, I think if I take a bath, everything's going to get better when I get out of the tub. It's true. So, Lauren from Ume.
Hi.
Hi. How are you doing today?
I'm all right. Yeah? I'm doing well.
So you guys are writing for a new record.
Yes.
And you have a show coming up this weekend at Hotel Vegas on Saturday the 12th. And is that your first show since, like, South By or something?
It'll be the second. We played back in April with the Toadies at Stubbs outside.
How was that?
Oh, that was amazing.
They're very nice people.
They've been huge supporters of us, and they're such great supporters of Texas bands.
Yeah.
And that was for a sold-out crowd.
Outside at Stubbs?
Yeah, that was great.
How do you handle that? You don't seem to... I've saw some live stuff of you. You don't seem to get... You don't look intimidated by the audience.
No. Whether we're playing to about 10 people in a basement or to a couple of thousand, I do the same thing.
Yeah.
I just let go and have fun. Hold nothing back there. So, and the big stage at Stubbs is amazing to play on.
I can imagine.
It's always been a dream, so it was fun.
Normally when I play inside and there's nothing going on outside, I go and pretend air concert outside in between whatever I'm doing. I'm lying, of course. So you guys are working on some new songs for a record. That's where you're at right now, right? You're writing songs for a new record?
Yeah, we're writing for a new record. We released a new record called Phantoms back in August. And those were songs that we've been working on for several years since we had self-released our EP back in 09. And that was all done with our old drummer, Jeff, who we had kind of started with playing. But at the beginning of last year, we got a new drummer, Rachel Fuhrer, and she's amazing. So now we're writing with her.
Awesome.
It's taking it
so
up a notch.
So do you guys ride all together?
Yeah,
three people together?
Yeah. Sometimes I do stuff on my own, but for the most part, you know, we write as a band.
That's cool. How does that work? So your husband's the bass player?
Yeah.
And you guys were married before you started the band?
Mm-hmm.
How did the band come up? I don't even know where to start with this. I'm kind of in the middle and
cool.
I'm bouncing back and forth.
Yeah.
You're from Houston. Let's start there.
Okay, where am I? I'm actually from a very small town south of Houston called West Columbia, a town of about 4,000 people.
Wow, I've never even heard of it.
No one has, but it was the first capital of the Republic of Texas.
Wow.
If that means anything to
anybody. That means a lot to me. No. I'm a secessionist, if that's what that's called.
Really small, what you might call a hick town. And I got it there as best as I could, but I started playing music there when I was 14 in a neighboring town with some older guys. Kind of got involved in a DIY punk community there.
Yeah, that's what I was reading about. Yeah. It started at a skate park, is what it said.
That's where I met Eric. But we had been playing shows at a local community center in a town called Lake Jackson. And they were these guys were bringing a lot of, kind of great punk bands. First show I ever saw, there was this band called 15 from the Bay Area. And it's like Los Crudos. And so it was a real kind of youth-oriented community.
Yeah.
And
you were young? You were like 14 then?
Yeah. And I was playing in a band with them. There was another guy my age, and then some other guys that were in their early 20s and late 20s. But they heard I could play guitar, and that's just how I started.
There's always this sort of like, oh, and she's really good for a girl, or she's, you know what I mean? Like, did you have to experience any of that? Or in the DIY punk community, there isn't a lot of sexism, is there?
With these guys, they never...
It's like the Motley... not like the Motley Crue scene.
Though I am... reading that book right now.
You know what? I stopped reading that book because it kind of bummed me out after a little while. How do these people live with themselves?
It was terrible, but I mean, it's interesting read. But the guys were never surprised that I could play, the people that I was in my first band with. But I still experienced that. I mean, even from when I was 15, I remember playing a show. This was at a club in Houston, and some guy came up to me. And at that time, I never sang. I only played guitar, and I...
You've got a really good voice.
Oh, thank you.
Very beautiful, yeah.
And I was terrified even to talk into a microphone, and had a very different stage presence then. I still had, you know, my Marshall stack, but I'd have my back to the audience and head down. But, it was still loud and thrashy, but I remember this one guy approached me and goes, oh, you know, I heard you in a band. Like, yeah. He goes, so are you the singer? I said, no.
Right.
Oh, you must be the bass player. No. Oh, are you the drummer? I was like, no. He goes, oh, well, you must be the dancer. I said, no, I'm the guitar player. So,
were there a lot of bands with dancers at that point?
No, I never saw a band with a dancer. But people are, you know, still somewhat surprised, unfortunately. Even recently, we were playing in Pomona, California, at this huge venue called the Glass House. And I was getting out of the van loading our gear. And the door guy wasn't going to let me in. And I go, well, I'm in the band. He goes, well, no, your band already loaded their gear. And he goes, no, that band already loaded their gear. And I go, no, I'm in the band. He goes,
no,
you're not. I said, no, they haven't loaded my guitar. So,
that's weird.
It's weird.
And dude, you're traveling with your husband. That must be kind of nice, though, right?
Yeah, it's great. Like I said, we met around music. It was one of my shows with that band, 12 Blades, and we were playing at a skate park in Baytown, Texas, which if anyone that's in East Houston,
oh, yeah.
Terrible. It smells like sulfur around there, but
it does smell like sulfur. And there's this weird thing where the sky is green.
Yeah, yeah.
One of my first demos I recorded out there, there was a place called there's a friend of mine had a label out there, and his name is Richard Cagle.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a thing called Saturn Records.
Mm-hmm.
And my band went out there at some point in like 1989 with the sound guy from Fitzgerald's.
Yeah.
Produced our thing.
Mm-hmm.
Was not the best career move we could have done, but that's my experience with Baytown. And it does smell terrible.
Yeah, and we were at a place called Wade Road Skate Park, and I'd played there with a band called Spaz, who had, I think, they were known for having 80 songs on a 7-inch.
Wow.
So that tells you what kind of music it was, you know.
Jesus.
1.5 seconds, just super grindcore, thrash type stuff. And
what is grindcore? I'm sorry, I'm not unhip, but what is grindcore exactly?
To me, back then, I mean...
What back then?
Extremely thrashy, lots of feedback, super...
Yeah. What's the singing, screaming, or... Is there some kind of style of...
Screaming.
Okay.
Yeah, and at least the stuff that 12 Blades did was a little more diverse, but, you know, it was politically charged type music. And we had lyric sheets and everything. And
right. So what year was that?
96, 97.
What kind of political charge did you have at that point?
I know
you're young.
The singer did all the lyrics, so I was just the guitar player.
Did you know what his issues were? What was he lashing out against?
So our bass player... it was political issues ranging, you know, from he had one song about Chico Mendez, who's a political activist was murdered.
Okay. All right.
Then our bass player was actually in a wheelchair, so we even had a song called Handicapped Parking Spaces.
Wow.
We had a song called Spare Change about the fashion punks who would beg for money, but then were using it on drugs and not for anything good and not.
Right.
So, you know, it was issues from handicapped parking spaces to
homophobia. Those are actually
homophobia.
Like real issues. I thought you guys were like, oh, we were writing about the war in El Salvador in the 80s.
No,
Bono shit, but like real
that.
Stuff
real
that you can do something about.
Things. Yeah,
yeah.
That was what it was about.
Yeah. And that's the interesting thing about the punk scene is that it chooses the way that it is exclusionary in some ways. But it's very inclusive in ways that the regular world is not, in terms of racism, in terms of sexism, in terms of... It always seems like in the punk world, the door was open as long as you were cool.
Mm-hmm.
Is that so, or was there some attitude and some...
At least in the community we grew up in, this was also in a very small town, so these were all of the kids that weren't...
fitting in with the other things.
Would be able to come and congregate at these, and there were people there with that would have their handmade zines and their 7-inches.
Yeah.
And that's when we were introduced to a lot of political issues. And so anyone that kind of was thinking outside of the box, or that was a place for them to come to. That was my first kind of introduction to feminist issues and things like that. So.
And so did that open your eyes like to the world too, a lot? Or
oh, for
or
sure.
You just
but it was
guitar?
And it was such a diverse community too, and it was a chance just to meet a lot of other people, because I grew up in a very kind of more isolated West Columbia, Texas, you know.
yeah, geez. And so in Baytown, you're playing this skate park,
yeah,
right?
And I was very shy. Didn't really talk to anyone after the show, and I was just sitting there on the vert ramp afterwards, and a guy came up to me and asked for my number. That's the first time that had ever happened to me. And I gave it to him. I probably
but
sure
how old
were
you then?
I was 15.
You were 15.
And I sure wouldn't do that now. And but then that was Eric. And then we've been together ever since, making music together. I think it was always kind of a, it was fate. It was something, it was so strange that happened because we lived 80 miles apart and we were so young. And it's
how did that play out? It's very atypical.
I mean, it.
Yeah. How did you tell me? How did that work? That's an interesting story.
Yeah.
Isn't it? I mean, how did you guys keep it together? Were you guys same age? He's same age as
no,
you?
No, he was 3 years older than me. He was 18. He was a really good person. He is a really good person. And he was different from anyone else. And it's been just kind of amazing, our journey through. Then we got married pretty young. I was a sophomore in college. And I still was able, I remember even when I was in college, talking to some of my professors, and they found out I was going to go to grad school and to pursue a PhD in philosophy. And even some of my more feminist-minded professors were like, but I thought you were getting married. And I think one thing that we were able to do is we both shared this commonality of music, but we both very much had our own identities, and he was always really supportive in that, where I was able to go off and still go to grad school, and he has his computer career that he does, so...
That's fucking cool,
oh,
man.
Thank you.
I'm divorced, so I'm just always like, wow.
Yeah, and...
You guys should be marriage counselors.
It's been a...
How long have you been married now?
Oh, I'll just say over a decade, actually.
Wow,
we've been married a long
time.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you're still smiling when you talk about him. That's amazing.
Yeah,
still, it's like forever is like a 10 years, like, you shouldn't be smiling anymore. What the hell are you smiling about?
No, it's an anomaly for sure, and I don't think we fit the mold. If anything, we're almost kind of, in so many ways, we're kind of like this, you know, young couple involved in music and a lot of progressive things. But in other ways, we're kind of almost like old souls in a lot of ways, I think.
Yeah.
And I sometimes identify with that, where even some of our favorite restaurants are sitting there with, you know, the other old, I mean, not other old couples, but, you know, older couple and things like that.
Yeah.
More of a story kind of you might hear back.
Yeah.
Your grandparents are great grandparents.
So you guys lived 80 miles apart, and you obviously, like, how did you guys... He drove, right?
Yeah, I didn't
so
even
he would
drive.
Come visit you, or how did you guys? Would you go to the movies and stuff, or
well,
go
we went
see
to concerts?
Punk stuff?
We
okay,
went to
yeah,
shows.
Yeah, yeah. Sorry.
Yeah, so after I asked for my number, that next Tuesday we were playing. 12 Blades was going to play a show at this place in Houston called Fondy Community Center, with a band called Society of Friends, which actually has a. I don't know if you know Insect Records here in Austin, but it's a record label, and it's one of the guys that isn't... It's funny, because a lot of these people that were part of that scene, a lot of them
still
live in Austin
your,
now,
yeah,
and,
yeah.
And we see them around. So Tuesday night, I'm surprised my parents let me drive all the way up to Houston to play a show when I was a sophomore in high school, but we did, and he came out to that show, and we hung out, and...
That's so good. You guys don't have kids, though.
No kids.
No.
No. So we're on the road too much to have anything like that, so...
Yeah, I guess so. So then you guys, you were a sophomore in college and you got married and you guys, were you guys playing together then or not yet?
Yeah, we were playing in different projects kind of ever since we met. We played in different bands together.
Kind of a team?
Yeah. And, but even then I wasn't singing. Eric actually used to sing. And it wasn't until probably like 2002, I was actually finishing school. When I got into college, I was pretty nerdy and kind of isolated and really spent a lot of time on my degree. But near the end of college, I really had an itch to start playing again. And that's when we met Jeff at an Unwound concert. We'd already known Jeff for years because he, in high school, played in a band called Race Car Riot, and he played bass in that band.
Mm-hmm.
And we said, hey, if you ever want to come over and jam with us and play drums, we heard he had a drum set. He had never played drums before. I had Eric hadn't really played bass before, and I never sung. And then we started playing together, and we played a show, and people just were really into it.
You guys make a beautiful sound.
Well, thank
like,
you.
it's you can hear the roots of it, but it's still very unique. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Thanks.
Yeah.
But then right after we started playing with Ume, that's when I moved away. Eric and I moved away to Pennsylvania.
Oh, so you both moved out there?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, we both moved out
there. Where in Pennsylvania?
State College. It was awful.
Oh, really?
Frozen Fratland. We got out of there as quick as we could.
You went and got your PhD?
I got a master's.
Okay.
Got everything but my dissertation. I did all the coursework for the PhD and, you know, all the language requirements and logic and all of that. And I was actually teaching at Penn State. And,
wow.
But it wasn't my passion. I mean, I was really torn. There was a very isolated community. There was no you would kind of think in a college town, especially when I'm on the road, there's so many, all these college towns that really have a vibrant arts community, and music in this town was,
it was not one
fraternities
of those towns.
And football. And
Well, there's those kind of towns. Takes all kinds.
Yeah.
So then you guys moved back here?
Mm-hmm. We moved back here, but even then Jeff still didn't live here. And so I think people think, well, Umi's been around forever, but it wasn't probably until around 08 that the whole band lived in one town together.
Okay.
And then that's when we recorded our EP. But
And now, how did you guys do that? Rachel, did you do that on your own, or did you go to a studio and work with someone?
We recorded that with Frenchie at the Bubble.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
I just exchanged emails with him. He's in Germany.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Siding.
So, yeah, he did our EP.
Yeah. Did you learn a lot from him? I mean, he's a really, I don't know what he's like as a producer. I just know him as a dude and a, you know, a fellow jammer.
Yeah, yeah.
And he doesn't seem heavy-handed. He always seems so excited to be working with the artists that he's working with, and kind of that cool kind of, I'll make you the best you can be. Not like the, all right, well, we're gonna change you. We're gonna fix you. Right?
Right, right.
I hate that kind of attitude.
No, it was great working with him. I think it was our first time to really be in a... We had demoed a lot of material before. I think the first time we ever demoed was in a place in Houston that had recorded Beyonce and her sisters, and our friend was interning there. And I had never been in a studio, never even heard my voice on a mic, kind of through headphones like I'm doing now. And I remember getting the microphone and screaming because I was so scared. And then I got in trouble because it was Beyonce's sister's microphone. And
Solange.
They thought. But and then we had demoed some at Rap-A-Lot Studios, our place where Rap-A-Lot works in Houston. So more of these, where you're in there like 3 hours and you've got to record 10 songs and see what happens. Or our friend would have a 4-track and recording some demos. That's what we'd always done.
Right.
So we finally got to the Bubble. It was a real studio situation. And of course, we had a small budget, so it was still very rushed.
Right.
But he was the first one to really help us get our sound how it should be.
That's a good person for the sound that you make. You know what I mean? He's very tuned in to that world of music.
Yeah.
So what happened after you put out the record? You kept played shows. People responded positively. They kept on.
Yeah, we got a good response from that. We sold out of it. We self-released it, sold out of it. I've done now, and I think we're completely out of copies now. We just sold out of all the vinyl. There's no more CDs out of 2 pressings, so...
That's awesome.
We might need to get some more before we hit the road again.
Yeah.
But then we then did the record Phantoms last year, and that was a full length.
And did you do that with Frenchie as well?
We did part of it with Frenchie.
And
we kind of had to jump around for that one a bit. We recorded some at Cacophony Studios with Eric Walford.
Yeah.
We did some stuff in some guy's house in Denver. And then it was mixed by...
It's just such a nod. We did with some guy at his house in Denver.
Even with Frenchie, I was recording vocals in a broom closet. And it was finally mixed and kind of all brought together because it was pretty... It had a lot of disparate sounds scattered just because of the nature of the record. And we didn't even know if we were going to be able to finish it. And then I wrapped it up. Where else? Another guy's house, Andy Sharp. So another guy's house in Austin, too.
Yeah.
And it was mixed by, it's Jason Livermore at the Blasting Room in Fort Collins. And that's a studio that's run by the drummer of Black Flag and Descendants, Bill Stevenson.
Yeah. So what's the Colorado connection?
Our management... is based out of Denver.
Okay.
And they kind of introduced us to that.
So you guys have like management.
Are
you on a label?
We do now.
No.
Our record Phantoms was released by a new indie label here in Austin, actually.
Oh, cool.
Called Modern Outsider. And we were the kind of their first official full-length release. And they used to work at Danger Bird Records, which is a LA label that put out Silver Sun Pickups.
Oh, yeah.
And so they had heard of us. And when they wanted to start a label, they got in touch, and the timing was kind of right, so.
And that's the record you put out last year.
Yeah.
And so when you put out that record, then you started touring kind of incessantly, huh?
Mm-hmm. We had been touring and playing live ever since we began, but this is, you know, the kind of stuff where you drive 700 miles and play to 2 people and lose a ton of money and break down 8 times and blow a head gasket in the Mojave Desert. And
I call that a 30-year career.
Yeah, and still keep going, but we were never... I can't say we were never discouraged by it, but we kept going. And But I think in the last year, once we got our new drummer and we started hitting the road, we saw a change. We saw a change, especially when we played a festival this summer called Can Roxas, and it was at the Motor Speedway of Kansas, and they told us, "Here's your trailer," and had a whole list of, you know, all the drinks we can choose from and alcohol, and like, wow. I had a trailer with our name on it, so.
With a rider and shit. Wow.
Yeah, and so and that's when we played, shared the stage with right before we played, you know, Primus was doing their sound check, and
wow,
so that was just a different experience. I'm going, and then Flaming Lips were on that stage later that night.
Wow.
So once we did that, that was kind of a sense of like, oh, I think we made it to somewhere a little different now.
Yeah, I bet. And then, nice. And you also, like, I mean, I was looking at videos, and it was like in the same month you were in Denver and, mm-hmm. and New York. So you were definitely like crisscrossing the U.S.
Yeah.
Were you on tour with anyone in specific, or were you just kind of like picking up shows where you could and then filling in the holes with your own?
Both, for the most part. We, like that Westward show, we played a great festival in Denver with Yola Tango, and The Sword, and that was actually a funny story. We were on our way. We had to drive 15 hours from Chicago, and we woke up super early in the morning to get there in time for our 11 o'clock load-in, and one of the members of the band accidentally put gas in the diesel tank, and so we start leaving, getting out, and the van just dies.
Yeah.
And we didn't think we were going to make it to the show. And this was our first big festival. That was the Westward Music Festival in Denver.
I saw that. I saw the song from that.
We were going, I don't see how we're going to make it. And we broke down in Nebraska, and it happened to be the day of the big festival, Heritage Farm Festival or something like that. And everyone was already drunk at 10 o'clock and 10 a.m. And none of the car garages wanted to help us. So we were just begging in the ditch, and finally I just put on my Texas accent and just said, "I just need a miracle today, just anything to help us." So some guy goes, "Well, come on
wow,
by."
Wow, that was really good. That was like almost like a Reba kind of thing.
And so they, we were able to get a rental van, and we literally drove 100 miles per hour to get there. It was dangerous. We loaded everything up. Arrived in Denver. This was already 30 minutes after we should have started. Jumped out of the van. I found out my dress was tucked into my underwear. I'm running on stage. We had to plug our guitars into the other band's amp and just start playing. And we got one song. And, you know, there's...
Is like, that the song I saw? On the
Yeah. Like, there's a couple thousand people.
Yeah. You're rocking your ass off on that.
And we were just so... And, you know, this was so frustrating. We drove like a three-hour drive in about an hour and a half. It was bad. And, but then the crowd's response was so great, and everyone was screaming for us and cheering that they'd let us play one more song. So
that's awesome.
So it was really neat. Yeah.
And so you kept on going. Where else did you go? I mean, like, did you play with
we played like, Lou Fest. It was that was another huge drive we had to do. We played the night before for Dia de los Todes in New Braunfels, and that was a 110 degree show.
Wow,
that was a lot of fun. Black Angels played, The Sword played, then we had to jump in the van, drive all night to St. Louis, wake up, and then just get up. Actually, we never got to stop to sleep. We just drove straight to the festival and had to play at 2 o'clock. And that's about a 14-15 hour drive.
Yeah.
But we played that show, and then we ended up breaking the sales record for the festival, and TV on the Radio played, Surfer Blood played, Cat Power played, and we outsold everyone, and it was just amazing. We couldn't believe that.
Wow.
So that was a really neat experience for us. And St. Louis since then has been really supportive.
Yeah. And there's all those other bands are on these big-ass buses, and you guys are in this little fucking van or something.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That is awesome.
That was a really cool experience. We were just real grateful
for that.
When
was the thing with Rolling Stone? That was last summer, right?
That's the beginning of the year.
At the beginning of last year?
Mm-hmm. That was in February.
So I read it in a different bathtub? I did.
Yeah, that was February. I think it was my birthday in... February, whenever Jimmy Fallon announced it, and that's when he said Ume.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he announced all the bands that were part of it, and that was pretty cool.
Wow. That was really awesome.
Yeah. So that was a lot of fun. And what the funny thing is, we had, it was in late December, early January, and we decided, you know, to move on to get a new drummer. And I remember Rachel was the first person we asked if she was interested in being in the band. And she was, and so we had one practice, kind of a, you know, an audition, and she just blew us away. I mean, she was amazing. And then I have to email the next day and say, Rachel, do you want to do a photo shoot for Rolling Stone magazine? I know you've never played a show with us.
Right. It's nothing cooler than being in the Rolling Stone photo before you've ever played a show.
It was kind of a commitment for us because we said, well, we've got to practice, you know, for 30 minutes, and now we've got to decide if she's the one that's going to move on with the band.
Yeah.
And it was kind of a leap of faith on our part and on her part, but it all worked out.
How did that come about? Was that like a management solicitation kind of thing, or did somebody from Rolling Stone happen to hear you somewhere or something?
It was also co-sponsored by, Atlantic Records also, and they had heard a preview of our record, and they had submitted us for it.
That's awesome. So let me ask you, so have there been some bigger labels that have come down and...
Mm-hmm.
And what...
Yeah, we've
had... Not what's the holdup. Like, you have like a, well, what can you do for us that we can't do for ourselves at this point? Are you going to shoot us into this giant thing that we're not ready for?
Right,
you know what I mean?
Right. I think when we, after the EP, we started getting some offers. And for the most part, they really weren't the kind of deal we were looking for at all, or they would be just not artist-friendly deals at all. I mean, where they would control absolutely everything, including
the new kind of 360 deal.
Right.
They get your T-shirts and the...
Yeah, and if you ever start making any sort of... You know, they're owning your publishing, they're owning everything.
Yeah.
And that really... I remember we actually got a lawyer, and, you know, they said the bands that he's seen being most successful were bands that believed in themselves enough and had the confidence to know that they can do better than that.
Yeah.
So we did that for...
Who's your lawyer?
His name's Reed Hunter.
That's a good name. Sounds like the doctor on One Life to Live or something.
Yeah.
Dr. Reed Hunter.
I think he also is lawyer of John Mayer. I mean, he does some big names.
So that's cool.
But, you know, he does rock and roll.
So did he come to you guys and found you, and he was like, oh, I like you guys. I believe in you. I will represent you legally.
We had these friends, Dead Confederate. It's kind of a rock and roll band out of Athens. And we toured with them with this band, The Meat Puppets.
Yeah, I love The Meat Puppets.
And I said, yeah, The Meat Puppets. And they were the ones that introduced us to Reed.
Awesome.
So, yeah.
So you guys have made a lot of good friends and good... They're connections, but they're probably friends.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, people like what you're doing, and hey, man, you guys, you know.
Mm-hmm. But I don't think we've ever gotten, like, the big break or anything yet, you know? It's not as if, like, the perfect situation's ever come through.
Sitting in here in a poorly lit apartment on the lake is not having made it?
No, I'm just saying, like, we haven't had, you know,
no, I know
all these major labels knocking on our door.
Right. The bidding war hasn't started.
Yeah, it hasn't been anything like that. We're a working band, and we just keep doing what we're going
to
do regardless.
That's a cool fucking thing to say.
Yeah. We're not the type of band that just got one blog post and then all of a sudden it blew up. You know,
I think we've been Clap Your Hands, Say Yeah. That was the band.
There's a lot of bands like that.
Yeah, but that was kind of the initial, like, someone wrote something and then all of a sudden it was like, people were like, oh, did your band, have you seen any bands that sound like Clap Your Hands, Say Yeah?
Yeah, and there's a lot of these bands that never even played a live show before, or they've played a couple, and then they blow up without actually building a fan base. So we try to work at it, try to get our music out to as many people as possible.
Yeah, so you guys are in a writing phase now. What does that look like? Is that like you guys get in, someone has some kind of idea, and you just jam? And
sometimes it starts with a drum beat. Sometimes
y'all
it starts
just
with a guitar
jam,
riff.
Man. Y'all get in there and just jam, man. So awesome.
So
you get a drum beat, you get kind of inspired.
I used to not be able to. I never considered myself someone that could just jam, but I think I'm there now where, like, we can kind of improv and just let things happen. I think the best moments are intuitive or instinctive. Sometimes it just clicks. Sometimes we hash something out for
months.
Do you
bring that to the stage now in songs? Like, do you decide in a song you're feeling something and you go somewhere new with it, or you change a dynamic?
There might be certain
kind of something
thrashy, noisy solo parts that I do different things in, but for the most part I'm very controlled when I play, or have to be. I might not look it, but I'm very focused on what I'm doing. I don't drink anything before I play, and just sit there, and I'm doing too much with my fingers and my pedals
and
my vocals.
Yeah, talk to me about your pedals. You know what? This is sometimes I feel like I try and balance this show between, say, a fan that's listening because they like your music, but they don't necessarily need to know all your pedals. But there are also musicians that listen to it. They're like, what's that Lauren from Ume using? You know?
Oh, yeah, that's what I'm
interested
in.
Talk to us about your pedal board.
I like talking gear. I always have going a Electro-Harmonix POG pedal. Which original one, it's a poly octave generator.
Yeah.
And I do a lot of single note type rips, but I need a heaviness to them because I'm using...
It's a three-piece too, so...
Mm-hmm, yeah. And most of my guitars are single coil except for my Tele, so I need to just beep it up a bit. So what this does, it adds a nice sub-octave, and then I also have one octave higher and a lower and a two octaves higher.
Right.
Going, it just thickens up the tone, almost like a 12-string on a single note.
Right.
And I use that a lot. And you can also get more of an organ sound in there as well, which I don't use as much of, but I will be on a new song.
Like you use some modulation, like some chorus or anything like that?
No, I don't use chorus. Dream. I use, there's the built-in reverb of my amp. My distortion sound's actually just the distortion for my amp. I use a JCM 900.
So really what you use is the POG?
The POG, well, always going. And then I use delay pedals. I have a pitch shifter delay, and then I have just a digital delay that I use the reverse setting on.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Give a little backwards action.
Mm-hmm. I do the reverse delay and then a slap back and then another more analog type delay.
Well, you know that POG effect, it's interesting because I don't know if you know this. Are you do you like Cheap Trick?
Mm-hmm.
Well, their bass player, Tom Peterson, was the guy that invented the 8-string bass.
Cool.
Based on the same thing. Yeah. And Hamer made it for him because... Yeah. It's a three-piece, and he needed more, like when the guitar guy would go for the solo, you didn't want the kind of guitar rhythm to drop out. Mm-hmm, so,
mm-hmm. Oh, cool.
You know, you run one through distortion and then like a regular bass, so there's like things going on. It just widens the sound, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Are you asking us that or them?
No, I'm just saying. Yeah. It just does that. Yeah.
Yeah, and we do the two amps now on stage in stereo to thicken it up as well. So I actually have a full stack on stage. So, yeah, as a three-piece, people say.
Two heads?
Just one head.
Okay.
You know, we have to try to make a pretty big sound. We're not using backing tracks or anything. So, though I have been asked one time, a journalist said, "Let's talk off the record," and I said, "Okay." And she goes, "Are you going to be honest with me?" And I go, "Sure." She goes, "You're not really playing all that up there, are you?" And I said, "Well, what do you mean?" And she goes, "Well, that pedal, wasn't that a tape loop, or was everything being? They think I have other tracks being looped." I go, no, not at all.
No,
there's a delay
cool.
pedal, but it's not. It's not. It's all happening then and
right.
there.
Right. Yeah. You're not playing to any previously done thing.
Right.
So what's different about the stuff that you guys are writing now? Like what step have you taken from your last record?
I think since we got Rachel in the band, it's really felt like a new beginning for us.
Mm-hmm.
And she's really good. She has this new rhythmic intensity, and she's the only person in the band that's actually a trained musician. She teaches drums here in town, and she also studied at Berklee College of Music.
Wow.
So she can play anything. But what it's done for us is ideas we've always kind of had brewing that we wanted to do, we're able to do now. Some of the first stuff we've written with her has been, it's heavier.
I was going to ask that, but I know you came from like a thrash punk place, and there's obviously like some heavy shoegazer kind of stuff, and then there's kind of like this what sounds like an indie noise rock kind of influence as well.
I always think you play with really hard bands,
like why would you go on the road with Helmet and the Toadies if you weren't some kind of like, you know?
Well, we still, yeah.
Yeah! You know,
but I think we also try to incorporate a elements of beauty in the music as well.
Yeah.
And as I don't want to say a softness, but almost like an elegance or a grace, or
there's melody
more feminine
to you
touch
singing.
To
yeah, yeah. When you sing, there's an air in your voice. It's not. Yeah.
And I try to do that too with guitar to an extent, but the newer stuff, it's a lot more rhythmic focused. I think. I mean, we're doing a lot of more time signature things, and it's
really?
It's fun to play. Yeah. So we're doing a lot of more. I don't want to say proggy. That's not the right word, but
when you talk about different time signatures, your mind goes right to prog, you know.
But yeah, we're getting to play.
You're not
a
Dream
more
Theater
fun.
Yet, is
yeah,
what
yeah.
you're saying?
Not yet, okay. But it's heavier, I think, and it's going to be it's more fun to play right now. Like right now, we're just so excited to debut and play new stuff.
So you guys have a show on this comes out on Friday, so this will be tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
May 12th at Hotel Vegas, the In the Room series. Will you be playing some of these new songs,
yeah,
you think?
Yeah, we will be.
Cool.
For sure.
Excellent. And you also have some other things coming up. You have the Free Press Summerfest in Houston with Snoop Dogg, Willie Nelson, and the Flaming Lips.
Yes.
Do you guys smoke weed? Because this would be a great concert to be hanging out backstage on that level. That's just what I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the Bamberry Festival in Cincinnati with Death Cab for Cutie. That's really awesome.
Yeah.
What's the Passion Pit, GBV?
They're playing that as well.
And
Guided by Voices are also playing that.
Oh,
the day we're playing. Yeah.
Very nice. And you're playing the Homegrown Festival with Black Joe Lewis. Mm-hmm. I mean, you guys are playing with a lot of different kinds of bands. You're playing with Willie Nelson, Black Joe Lewis, and the Flaming Lips.
Yeah.
And Snoop Dogg.
Yeah.
That's
Yeah, we played with Wu-Tang.
Oh, and Helmet and Wu-Tang. Really?
We played with Wu-Tang last South by Southwest. Him and Erykah Badu did a DJ set, and it was a huge hip-hop show at Austin Music Hall.
Uh-huh. And you guys played at Austin
Music
Hall?
We opened, yeah. And the only other, we were the first band. So it was a very diverse crowd, but we went over really well. The crowd appreciated it.
That is awesome.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So we were super nervous about that one, but
you seem to have a very exciting life here. At least a very exciting career. Yeah, at least your music's good, you know, and
people
get behind it, right?
I think all we try to do is be genuine and super passionate about what we're doing. And I think people recognize that. It's not like a style or substance thing. It's a real we hold nothing back. And I think people...
That's what I got, just even from the YouTube things that I saw.
I think people appreciate that.
Yeah.
This kind of passionate energy. So many bands I see are up there now acting like they don't even want to be there.
Yeah.
And we're grateful to be there.
Yeah.
And I hope the audience picks up on that.
Yeah. And you know, I'm assuming that I've just over time, I've done this longer than you. Then I get that. As an artist myself, I get invigorated when I see somebody like that, that's doing that, and I catch myself, I'm like, fuck, the other night, I remember being at this gig and just being like, oh, come on, just finish this fucking song, you know what I mean?
Right.
And sometimes, sometimes it's not terribly exciting, it's just very utilitarian. You're going and you're making your money that you have to go, you know. And sometimes, it's hard to keep that kind of excitement and being glad to be there and to be in that moment, you know, without being stressed about other things in life or you'd rather be somewhere else or I'd rather be in Ume, you know, something like that.
I think whatever other stresses are going on, though, once I take the stage with my guitar, that's
they
a
go
one
away
chance.
Or do you put it into it? Like, is it a cathartic
Both.
Experience? Like, if you're pissed, do you get up there and it's like you'll come off with a bleeding hand or something?
I have, but... Yeah. It's, I think it's a chance where I feel like I can be the most real.
Yeah.
And show a side of myself that I don't think I ever would otherwise.
That's awesome.
And then that's liberating and cathartic,
yeah.
I think. And I think it's sometimes cathartic for the audience members, too. I remember we played a show recently in Hot Springs, Arkansas, and there were all these kind of girls in the front row and that were just really surprised when they saw another female musician get up there.
Yeah.
And then by the end, I mean, they're just sitting there, they're thrashing and doing everything I'm doing. And then next thing you know, they're jumping on stage and jumping off and stage diving and whole mosh pit broke out. And so when I still see that's fun.
Yeah.
And I go, well, if it's a cathartic experience for them as well, or a chance for them to scream and unleash. And
yeah.
That's fun too.
Yeah. Because a lot of times girls aren't encouraged to do that, but you're just as human as boys. You know what I mean? I don't understand why they can't.
I think, it's even an indie scene and whatnot, a woman showing an aggressiveness sometimes is not always...
Right.
It's not always embraced in the same way, or it's seen
of course,
as bitchy or something different
than it really is.
So, it's one of the things I do with Girls Rock Camp, too, the nonprofit here in Austin, is working with girls to express themselves however they want.
Yeah.
If they want to sing beautifully, if they want to rap, if they want to scream.
Yeah.
Just having... Any person, not just women, but even you guys, be able to express yourself however you want. And that's one of my dreams or kind of other goals here. Being a musician is to open up that door for people or shatter some expectations so that other people can...
Follow.
Be able to do whatever
Clear
they
the
want.
Way for some people.
And people not be surprised to see them there.
Right. Yeah. So I'm just looking at the memory numbers.
Oh.
I just realized that I didn't... optimize my machine, if you know
Is
what
that
I
bad?
Mean. No, it's not bad at all. I wish I'd love to meet Eric. I bet he's a really nice guy.
Yeah, he's awesome.
I mean, obviously.
Yeah, he's working. He actually has to. We're a working band, literally, and also on the road. His office is the van. He's a computer programmer.
Right. So what aspect of computer programming does he do? And nothing with like music software or anything, does he?
No, it's entirely different. different world. But
this is like he designs nuclear bombs in the future.
No. No, he works for a company on Silicon Valley.
Excellent.
Back-end programming.
So there's something that hasn't been announced yet that you guys are doing. And it's in July and August, you're going to do a national tour for the 20th anniversary of Meantime by the band Helmet and Toadies.
Yeah. That's not announced yet, but it's coming up.
I announced it.
That's fine. It's going to be announced next week.
Okay.
Officially. Or at least the dates, but...
Okay. So tell me about that. How did that come about? Through the Toadies, or did you guys meet Helmet somewhere?
The Toadies chose us and submitted us to Helmet, and then Helmet approved it.
Wow.
So that's going to be fun.
That's awesome.
And I think it's going to be a good show for us. I was... I saw Helmet a few years... A little longer than a few years back at South by Southwest, and... The crowd is, I mean, they like to rock out, and I think it's going to be a good show.
Yeah. When I first started playing with the bald dude in that poster behind you and the shirt that's like yours, the jersey shirt that's red and white, he was the biggest Helmet fan in the world, and he got me into them. He was so into them. I haven't listened to them in a long time. Have they still been putting out records, or have they been kind of in hiatus?
I think they put out another record in 2010.
Wow.
But this is going to be the 20th anniversary of Meantime. So
yeah.
I think they'll be doing the whole record.
It's pretty cool. There's going to be a lot of people.
Yeah, it's going to be great venues.
Yeah. Do you know how long, roughly, it'll be?
3 weeks.
That's great.
3 weeks.
Yeah.
So, and it'll be up the East Coast, Midwest.
Good. I love the East Coast. And plus, the drives are so much more friendly than the West Coast.
Mm-hmm.
And it's generally, I just like the East Coast better. Is that weird? Do you like the East Coast or the West Coast better? What do you like better?
Oh, there's towns in both I like. I like the look of the West Coast. I lived in Pennsylvania a while, and I didn't like that aspect. But I love New York.
I love New York, too. I love the Carolinas. I love it all. Mm-hmm. Is there anything that I'm missing here outside of the show? What time is you guys play at? The Doors are at 9 on Saturday, right?
There's one other
band.
I'm a solo artist called My Empty Phantom that I'm super excited to see. He's amazing.
Cool.
He's guitar and drums, you know, all together. So that's going to be exciting.
Wow.
And then us, so. And the last time we played Hotel Vegas, we've only played there once before. That's when Anthony Bourdain came out to see us.
Yeah, I forgot to ask about this.
That's pretty cool.
Tell me about that. You guys, they filmed you for No Reservations.
Yeah, the No Reservations people got in touch, and they were picking a few bands to cover, and they covered, the other bands were Sleigh Bells and The Sword.
So does he likes more varakus bands, Anthony Bourdain.
Yeah, I know he had recently done that show with Josh Homme from Queens of the Stone Age.
Right.
And so for them to ask us, because Queens of the Stone Age is all of us one of our favorite bands.
So did they film you and then you go eat dinner with them or something?
Yeah, he came. Well, they never told me for sure if he was coming to the show, but they were going to film us. And then the second song, someone in the crowd screams, "It's Anthony Bourdain," and he was off to the side. And they said, I remember his producer said, "Very rarely in the years we've done this, I've never seen my cameraman smiling and Tony smiling at the same time."
Wow.
So I guess if they were smiling, that means it was a good
night.
And
you're in this point where you're like calling him Tony. That's cool.
That's what they called him. And then we went to dinner with him.
Where'd you guys eat?
A place called Barley Swine.
Where's that?
It's down on South Lamar.
That guy always I always think of him as having his horrible diarrhea all the time. You see that show? He's in the mountains of Indonesia eating food off of a dirt floor with these people.
We ate chicken testicles and shrimp heads that night.
You did? You ate it too?
Yeah,
I guess if I was with them, I wouldn't say no to anything.
Oh, yeah, we had to eat it. And but they gave us, I don't remember leaving.
What an interesting guy that he's able to sit down and do that same experience with a guy like Ted Nugent and then with you.
He was so easy to talk to.
Yeah. But I mean, it's cool. It's an open guy. I bet he had a great experience with both of you. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It was fun. So, and I was glad he got to see us on stage.
Because you seem the complete opposite from Ted Nugent as well. I meant by that analogy. Sorry.
And he had said he had never seen that much rock in that small of a room, in years. So I think he appreciated what we had done. And then he just started talking. He was pretty sloshed when he showed up already. And then I think the restaurant kind of tricked us. They said, "Well, we recommend this beer." So we're like, "Okay, we'll have it." After two of these, I'm saying, "This isn't a normal beer." It was one of those high alcohol, 12% type beers. So I don't remember leaving. I don't know how it ended. So
That's good.
The episode's going to be a surprise for us too.
Right, but you know what? I mean, hanging out with Anthony Bourdain, that would be the fantasy, is that he comes, smiles for the first time at your band, then you eat chicken testicles with him,
yeah,
and you don't remember the end of it because you got so drunk. That sounds like exactly what I would want out of an experience with Anthony Bourdain.
That's what happened, so it was amazing.
Yeah, that's great.
We were honored.
And that airs in September, right?
Mm-hmm, that'll be in September.
It's hard to wait that long, isn't it? Is it? Don't you want to see it? I want to see
it
now.
I'm always scared to watch myself on TV or video.
Right, right.
So, but I'll have to watch that.
Yeah.
But it's always awkward.
And plus you'll get to see it's something you don't remember.
That's right.
The end of the dinner. So everyone that's listening, I'm going to read off these dates again really fast. And, your website, how do people find you? Just
For everything, it's Ume Music, and that's UME Music. So Facebook, Ume Music.
Great.
That's website and everything.
So they're doing the Free Press Summer Fest. Is that one day? It's June 2nd?
It's June 2nd and June 3rd.
When are you guys playing?
I'm not sure yet.
Okay, so you should go both days.
Yeah.
And What Made Milwaukee Famous is playing too.
Mm-hmm.
And they're playing
great.
Friday for the In the Room series at Hotel Vegas. You guys are playing on Saturday the 12th. And just look them up. They'll be in Dallas. They'll be here. They'll be everywhere.
Thanks.
Is there anything I'm leaving out? You want to say hi to anyone? Hi to Rachel and Eric.
Hey, Rachel and Eric. Wish y'all were here.
Yeah. I wish you guys were here too, because they're nice people.
Oh, yeah.
But you are
awesome.
Very nice. And,
thank you.
And I've really enjoyed talking to you. And you guys, when do you think do you play late that night? This is on a personal note. Do you start at like 10 or 11?
11? I'm thinking the first band are going at 10. We're probably going at 11.
Good, because maybe I can catch some of it. I have a gig, but it's
cool.
I think it finishes early.
Cool.
I think
that'd be great.
Yeah, I would love to see it.
Awesome.
Well, thank you so much for coming, Lauren.
Thank you.
All right, that was Lauren Larson from the band Ume. Oh, she's fucking cool. I really liked her, man. She's very calm, too. I felt a little more relaxed after she was here. It's kind of hard to relax these days. All right, be sure you go see Ume at Hotel Vegas. Be sure you have a nice weekend. I hope you have a nice weekend. And if you're in Houston, Friday, May 11th, which is the day that this podcast comes out, Skyrocket will be at the Continental Club there. Come on out and check it out. And remember, like us on Facebook. Subscribe to us on iTunes. If you have Stitcher, check us out on there. And, write us every once in a while. Let us know how we're doing, because we don't know. We think we're doing great. At least I do. Hey, all right. Here's some more Ume. Everyone have a great weekend. Goodbye.